is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome back to Wyman and Bob. Mike Lefko filling in today. And on the line right now, we have Ryan Roland Smith, who it seems like every time I turn on my TV, there's a Ryan Roland Smith TV commercial. What are is it just one? Is it just one commercial, or are there like 12 playing?
Well, there's actually 16. If you break it down, depending on the region that you're watching TV in.
Yeah.
It's basically the King LASIK, which best thing ever when I got LASIK eye surgery. I'm not just trying to sell you on that.
Yeah.
And we have a Chevy car commercial.
Yeah.
From the good folks at Sumner Chevrolet. So, yeah.
Yeah. By the way, Ryan Roland Smith, joining us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. So, what do you think about the young guys? We were just talking a little bit about Bryce Miller and Brian Wu, and you know, going out there. I mean, I think those guys kind of made it look easy, but I can't imagine the nerves that you would have going out, especially facing those hitters. You ever have an experience like that? What was the closest thing to that in your career, Ryan?
Well, I think the debut side of it, and when you're talking about, you know, obviously Bryce Miller had a softer landing. Now, it doesn't matter. Anytime you make your major league debut, besides how many people in the seats or who you're facing, there's so many external things that go on. But I think with Brian Wu, like, here's a kid who, you got to remember, hasn't played a whole lot of professional baseball. He was converted shortstop, and you know, in regards to games, very minimal before he made his major league debut. And then all of a sudden, you get thrown to the Wolves. You're playing against the Texas Rangers. You know how good they are, and it's a packed house too. I don't know if you could notice when you're watching the game on the TV, weekend game in Texas. Packed house.
Yeah.
So that you had a couple of these things. Plus, two, getting to the game was a little tougher as well. But with all that being said, he struggled. He knows it. He struggled. He talked about it after the game. But regardless of that, anytime you make your debut, it is, you'll never, ever forget it, good or bad. But I think he's going to be good. There is no doubt about it. He's got that smooth, just easy velocity. Nothing's forced with him. He's got that, you know, good, he projects really well. He's got that, you know, really good starting pitcher body and everything else. So, you know, I think the situation and the nerves kicked in. I've definitely been in those situations. My debut, I had to play against, you know, the Cincinnati Reds when Griffey came back for the first time. It was a packed house. Everyone's excited to see him. I didn't make a start, though. That's the other thing, too. You're starting that game. And then another time, you know, playing in New York in Yankee Stadium later on that year when they're in a playoff hunt, that was intense as well, coming in a big spot. So there is moments like that, regardless of who you're facing. Sometimes the situation can take over. But watching Brian Wu do his thing on Saturday, I was still impressed, and he's going to be good for sure.
Well, Ryan, we saw kind of, well, the full armada, really, of this Rangers lineup over the weekend. Just really 1-9 there. Just very potent, powerful offense there. When you look at that lineup and you look at the Mariners lineup, what are the differences that the Rangers have going for them right now?
Well, I think, first of all, a couple of things with the Rangers. You know, we've talked about how they've added pitching and stuff like that. I think their biggest addition, honestly, when you talk about some of the add-ons the last couple of years, is Bruce Bochy. And I know it's not like all of a sudden he's the one, you know, giving hitting tips at all, by any means. But there's just a certain presence. You know, when a guy like that, and I got a chance to meet him at the World Baseball Classic that qualifies when he was managing the French team. And, you know, here he is, and he just has, when he tells stories, when he talks the game, he has a certain calmness about him. I've talked to guys who have played for him, and they all say the exact same thing. So what you have, the elements you have there when you're talking about that offense, you've got, you know, Marcus Semien, who we saw him last year in a Rangers uniform, not the same guy as what he is now. He's that back to that guy who was basically, you know, MVP caliber when he's with the Oakland A's. So him in the top of the lineup, then you got Seager, who's now healthy. And then down the line, you have a certain presence about you and a certain way of doing things. That's what you see from the Texas Rangers. And it's scary, man. You're watching them hit. You still watch these young players. They've got a good, you know, crop of young players, guys who, you know, who basically they parallel with the Mariners. They really do. But at the same time, they just have a certain confidence and a certain presence about them because of some of those things I talked about, some of that veteran, veteran presence that they have, especially it starts with Bruce Bochy. So I think that when you make when you compare the two, you have that power in the middle, you have less swing and miss, and you just have a certain way about going about things day to day that, man, they look really tough for sure.
Well, speaking of him, we were just talking about service, Ryan, and Scott, I feel like he's the perfect coach for younger players. And I think the other thing about him is that I think he angers fans because they want to see him get more emotional and everything, but he's doing exactly what he should be doing. You know, it's a long season, and I feel like he's particularly suited to deal with younger guys and especially doing it over the long haul, not panicking, not getting emotional and things like that. And it's always weird to me when people want to see more emotion out of the coach. I'm like, you're supposed to be the example, man. So, and I feel like, that service does a perfect job that way.
Yeah. If it's not, and this obviously with either the manager or the pitching coach or the boss at work or whatever it may be, if it's not your demeanor, then you don't try and force it. It's not something where like, oh, now all of a sudden stuff's going wrong here, so I'm going to start changing. I'm going to start changing the way my demeanor is when stuff's going well. If stuff's going well and you're intense a certain way, like I had Kirk Gibson with the Arizona Diamondbacks. When things were going well, he was an intense dude. Intense. When things were going bad, he was an intense dude. Mm-hmm. Some guys I had that when things are going well, they had a certain calmness and a presence. When things weren't going so well, all of a sudden they start flipping out and showing emotion. And straight away, like, oh, all of a sudden things aren't going well. As a player, you sense that. The other thing is, too, in regards to work with young players or longevity and that kind of stuff, let's not forget, Scott Service came into this situation as a manager when the team didn't really have the same kind of philosophy or direction they have now. When you go, even before they started stripping this thing down, then all of a sudden they go into a rebuild where, what was it, 2018? So he has to work through all that, and so the focal point was about developing players, right? And now all of a sudden they're in a situation where they did struggle. This time last year they did struggle. They were 10 games under 500. I say that all the time. Now, if you ask someone who all of a sudden changes, flips his script as the way you deal with players when things aren't going well, you're not getting out of 10 games under 500. You just lose the respect, and you lose the players' trust and respect straight away, right? And I know, Dave, I'm sure you had different coaches who had that about them as well, where things all of a sudden change, they press the panic button, you can sense it from a mile away, especially some of these players. But I think with Scott Service, you've got to remember, when you have these players that they're all of a sudden morphing into veteran players, well, he's been with them those years too when they were young players anyway. So this team, this core of players and him have sort of come up basically through some of the same phases together. So I think that, look, it was ugly on the weekend. I'm not going to lie. And Bryce Miller, I mean, if we get a chance to talk about him, what we saw from Bryce Miller, some of the concerns. But it was ugly this weekend. And it's kind of like you hit that rock bottom and you're thinking to yourself, okay, now all of a sudden I have to start changing things. When you were here last year and you weathered the storm and you had certain characters in that locker room that were able to facilitate that. And so it's that time of the year, man. You just have to work through it and get back on track, and especially with the starting pitching.
Okay, so what would the Sandhill Warrior do? How would he coach them up?
Oh. Well, yeah. That's a great. How would he coach them up? He would be high energy, cracking jokes, what have you. But I've seen my dad get flip out a couple times. And straight away, I'm like, Dad, you're kidding. You go around the Sandhills. What are you doing? But no, he'd be upbeat, super positive, and doing his thing. That's for sure. That's for sure. But yeah.
All right. Well, an actual serious question here, because you led into the Bryce Miller discussion. These last two starts, it feels like, okay, maybe teams have figured him out, or at least they've figured out the fastball a little bit. I know you've described the fastball and what made it so difficult to hit. Are teams now starting to pick up on that, or what's kind of?
So what
is going on with Bryce Miller now in these last two starts?
I think it's either two things, and we'll find out in about a month, I would say, from now. Number one, the adjustment from being a minor league player to a major league player, having the days in between starts, how many days you have in between starts, dealing with the adrenaline, dealing with the pitch counts, dealing with some of the big, exhausting, pressure situations, those high-leverage situations with two runners on. is starting to get to him and he's trying to adjust to it. That's number one. Number two, and this is the one you hope that's not the case. Number two, he's just flat out of gas. I mean, I'm watching his fastball. And you talk about how dynamic that fastball is. The first five starts, you look at the spin. He's 2,600 RPM, and you look at the velocity. Well, his velocity's dipped down now in a short while, down to a good mile, 2 miles in velocity, the average velocity. Plus, the spin has dipped as well. So that's telling me, either two things. Number one, he's really fatiguing, and he's trying to push through. Not that he's in pain, he has an injury, but just physically fatigued, right? And then there's something going on there where hopefully they can figure itself out. But number two, and I'm kind of guessing it could be this, that's a massive adjustment. When you get from starting once a week, essentially, what they do, they really taper everything in the minor league because it's more about development. You start once a week and you're on that nice, soft 80, 85 pitch count, maybe get to 90. Then you get thrusted into the situation he's in now where he's the man, like he's dealing, as we saw. And you're going 100, then you're going 90 the next time, and the adrenaline's through the roof, in packed house, whatever it may be. It's a massive adjustment. It takes some time to adjust to that. He's even said this a few times as well, that the days in between is a massive adjustment. You went from, the 5 or 6 to now all of a sudden the 4 days. You throw the travel in, all the other expectations. I think hopefully you're going to see him adjust. I hope so. I just watched him pitch. He just looks flat out of gas.
Hey Ryan, we were talking, I know, on this show anyway, and I think we kind of agreed on a couple of things. One is if JP Crawford can just, lead the team in on-base percentage and, we know he's not a power hitter. He's got 3 home runs, but I mean, his on-base percentage is great. And then the other guy was Jared Kelnick. And, his average 270, I mean, he's 10 home runs. He's getting it done. Those two things happened. And so, it's like, well, I thought, hey, if those things happen, we're going to have a much better record than we have.
Yep.
So what do you think has been the biggest letdown so far up to this point of the season?
Well, I think some things have happened as well besides some of those good things you mentioned. JP's been great. I've loved what I've seen. Jared Kelnick, he's been struggling more so lately. Yeah. I think that we've talked a lot about the and just back to Kelnick, if you looked at like the last 10 games, for example, there's been a lot more chase. Obviously the batting average has dipped a little bit. There's been some of those little things that you start to look at. When guys start to slip into a little bit of a skid. But I think, too, the thing that I think that has happened that you weren't kind of expecting, is the amount of strikeouts and the lack of the on-base around guys that you expect to strike out. So what I mean by that is you have Teoscar Hernandez that you kind of anticipate. All right, you can live with the strikeouts, right, because you can get the power and what have you. But then the lack of or what we got built off from last year was the ability to reach base, like JP Crawford, similar style to that, to what he's doing. We can draw walks and everything else around some of the strikeouts. So it's like, all right, we can live with the strikeouts, but we've got the guy in front of him, behind him, who is going to just have tougher at-bats. And so you have that. So they went through that. I think it's slowly getting better. I haven't got my computer in front of me to take a look at some of the trends. But on top of that as well, now you're in a situation down in Texas or coming off that road trip where you're starting to press. You're feeling it. You're really feeling that the dynamic, the offense dynamic, is not quite the same as what it was last year. Scott Service had a hitting meeting, and the sole purpose, this is back on the homestand, the sole purpose of the hitting meeting was, hey, look, our starting pitching's been so good, we need to pick it up. And now all of a sudden they're going to Texas, and they're facing the Texas Rangers in the division, offensive juggernaut. They just got smashed by the Yankees. Now they're feeling some of the pressure from a team and from an offensive standpoint. So I think there's a couple of these little things that you see. And look, this is all, it goes in ebbs and flows, as we all know. Baseball's crazy, right? It's such a long season. But you have these moments, and when it just gets so magnified when you have a young stud like Bryce Miller come up. You have this excitement for Brian Wu that he struggles in that debut. When you put days like that back to back, it just gets so much more magnified.
So when you look at this, though, and the things you've mentioned, Does it feel like they're missing something, whether that's a veteran for a clubhouse leadership presence, just the guy that can also get on base and help mitigate some of these strikeouts? What are they missing to kind of help alleviate all these concerns?
Yeah, so I think that, you know, when the Pirates were in town, you know, Carlos Santana was there, right? And you had a chance to speak to the coaching staff for the Pirates, and the one thing that he said that he brings is that presence in the clubhouse, regardless of what he does on the field. And it was just interesting to hear that, because you have a guy like that, and you mentioned, like, to mitigate, like, some of this stuff. It's not so much on the field. Yeah, sure, I'd love to bring someone in who hits 40 bombs and can walk and et cetera. That'd be great. That'd be a huge upgrade. We all know that. But just something, just to, if you have that kind of presence next to you in the clubhouse, where you just kind of talk, you have to go up to him and ask for hitting tips. But it's just a situation. You go get thumped by a team by 10 runs. You walk in the next day, everyone's heads down. There's just a different feel in the clubhouse. Someone who just says one thing, does one thing, looks at someone, is in a cage with someone. It just takes some of that the pressure off the moment. It always happens, right? I used to have those guys like that for me, you know, on a pitching staff or a bench player, like, because, you know, as a pitcher, you spend 4 of the 5 days sitting on the bench. But we used to have some bench players back in the day that just kind of just in the mood in the dugout changed if they were hanging out in the dugout. You know what I mean? Just little things like that. It's tough, man. Like I said, it's every single day, especially when you're on the road and, you know, and you're going through some of these grinds. It can be really, really tough. So, I don't know. Something like that can definitely help. I don't know where you get it from or how you analyze that, how you break that down from an analytical standpoint to bring it in. But I think there is a little bit of that missing at the moment, for sure.
You know, you talk about guys saying stuff and just saying the right thing and being like the right part and everything. I always think about Cal because, you know, I don't know what he's like before a game. I saw him light Matt Brash up one time when he had a mound visit that I thought was that was really funny. But, I mean, that's a guy that just doesn't say that much. But it seems like for him, he is maybe – he's just a rock. He's just such a great example to the rest of the team. I feel like he's one of the – I mean, it's an interesting way for, you know, to be a leader. He just, by how he is a leader, is just being the most solid dude on the team, it seems like.
Yeah, for sure. I think so too. And again, you feed off everyone's energy, right? I think with Cal Roy, I still think he's still, and I agree with everything what you're saying, but when I think of it, like when I'm trying to put myself in that clubhouse, whether you're a young player or a veteran player, I think with Cal Roy, I think he's a year or two off being a guy who can be the guy I described a couple minutes ago, just because he's still so young in his career, still. He manages the pitching staff, especially on the field, so well. But he's still, there's still that sense of, you know, how much has he been in there? How many times has he been through these skids? How many times has he been to the playoffs? You know, how many times has he struggled himself and then bounced back from it or gone through a 10-day skid or whatever it may be? He just... it's not his fault. He just hasn't been there long enough, you know. He's going to have a massive career, but I think he's a year or two away from being that. The presence I described, but everything you said, though, I totally agree, for sure.
Ryan, we got a text saying, are you throwing plates against the wall? What's going on? And I have to explain, you are. You told me you're at Driveline. So, yeah, what are you doing down at Driveline Baseball?
So I have about a dozen Australian high school age players that they're here. They're working at a Driveline for a week. A bunch of hitters, a bunch of pitchers, and then we're going to go showcase. So for these next couple of days, I've got some Aussies in town. I'm showing them beautiful Seattle. I'm going to do some tour guiding later on today, and then tomorrow we're going to go take them around the city. Maybe you know, go to the fish market. So if you see a bunch of Australians being absolute bogans all over Seattle, you know exactly what you know exactly who they're with.
Are they all bogans? So how do we identify them? I'm thinking, like,
what are they dressed like?
They're cut off shorts, cut off jean shorts, maybe something like that.
Well, they're all wearing the my company's Next Gen Baseball. They're all got the Next Gen gear on, so they can't wear their regular bogan outfit. Put it that way.
Yeah.
So I would love to get a couple of these because I got a couple of the dads too. And you're talking bogan, mate. I'd love to get them on the phone. You would die laughing, but I don't want to make this too unprofessional, that's for sure.
Well, I was going to say, Dave wasn't here when you filled in with Bob, and we had you and Grant Balfour. I mean, is it something like that? Yes. Yeah, just constant Australianese.
Times by 10, because they're all on vacation. So they've maybe had a couple brown Gatorades down here at Driveline, too, some of the dads. You know what I mean? So
brown Gatorades.
Put a couple away even during the day. They're so excited to be here. So.
Hey, man, you're doing a great job. I saw you. I texted you the other day. I said, hey, you did a great job on that show. And you were like, which one? Because you're everywhere, man. You're on with Kevin Millar, and I can't remember the other guy. But those guys loved you, man.
I didn't know what you were referring to because you were on vacation and I was filling in for you. So I thought you meant your show.
Oh.
And so I wanted to make sure, but you were talking about me being an absolute clown on Intentional Talk, which is a lot of fun. And I appreciate it. Thank you for reaching out. I honestly thought maybe you just turned on the app or something when you're off, sitting on the deck chair at the pool and just to tune in to see how it sounded when you were gone. That's why.
That's something that's never happened, Ryan. Me going on vacation and listening to my own show.
That's why I was confused. I'm like, there is no way you're turning this on, please. and taking notes of how it sounds and better segments and how that can improve the show. No, he's out.
No,
by the pool. No chance.
I was listening to you because I was learning things and it was entertaining. It's good stuff, man.
Yeah, right. Well, there's nothing to learn on that Intentional Talk. Anytime I go on that show, there's definitely nothing to learn, but there is some good laughs. That's for sure.
Well, thanks for taking some time out and talking to us, Ryan. Get back to the kids and the brown Gatorades, and we'll talk to you next week, man.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys. Yeah.
Tell those Bogans hello for us. Thank you.
Yeah,
we'll do.
All right. If you missed any of our conversation with Ryan Roland Smith or anything from our show, you can go to our podcast page at seattlesports.com. Click on our picture and hit subscribe to make sure you never miss a thing. And make sure to check out all of our video breakdowns and articles at seattlesports.com/Bob or seattlesports.com/Wyman. All right, coming up, what should our expectations be for Ken Walker this season? Running back Ken Walker ran for over 1,000 yards his rookie year. We'll break that down next. This is Seattle Sports on 710 and seattlesports.com.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
It's Wyman and Bob. Mike Lefko filling in all week, actually, until Paul Moyer comes on Friday, right?
I'll still be here, though. Don't worry.
Yeah,
I'll just be over there. Yeah,
Mike's everywhere.
I'm everywhere.
He's everywhere. You can't get rid of him.
Even if some want to, Dave.
Who?
Oh,
who would that be?
I don't know. There are some people. I see texts.
The haters.
Yeah.
Ken Walker, I'd forgotten about this. You wrote it down here, Mike, so it must be true. The hernia injury and I remember the jammed ankle. I don't remember the hernia.
It was before
situation.
The season. Do you remember that? Because it was like not a sports hernia. It was a, remember Pete referred to it as some like unusual again, or it was it's a strange type of hernia thing, but he missed the first game of the season.
That's right.
With that.
Yeah, and I was just looking at Kenneth Walker's numbers. First of all, I drafted at number 41, and a lot of people panned that pick. They didn't think he was good. His first carry, so he gets in the transfer portal from Wake Forest and goes to Michigan State, and his first carry was a 75-yard touchdown.
Can't
and he
that.
Averaged 6 yards a carry in college, and he looked great. The other thing that I had forgotten about, he's only 5'9". Which really doesn't matter at running back, right? But I don't know. He runs bigger. He looks like a bigger player than he is. But, like we were talking about with Devin Bush.
Say good leverage, right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's what we were talking about with him as a linebacker. So low man wins. So, it was interesting that people didn't think that was going to be a great pick. And he really had a great year, had 1,000 yards. And I know that everybody goes, well, it's not the same as 16 game season, but it's only like a 5-yard average, as far as having the 17th game. It's only like a five. I think it goes from 62-5 to 57 or 58 or something like that. Our geniuses on the text toy can text in what it is. But, guy ran for over 1,000 yards. And really, you know, you look at the first five games you mentioned, he didn't play in that game. He didn't play in the game against Carolina. He was inactive for that game. That was the jammed ankle. Because remember, at the end of the Ram game at the Rams last year, they were down to like their fourth string running back. But
and we learned that guy couldn't see.
Yeah, he couldn't see. Exactly.
His contact got knocked out and he couldn't see.
Yeah. And we recommended he get Eric Dickerson glasses. Yeah. But, you know, and then the first four carries when he did start the season, first game, I should say, four games, four carries, three carries, eight carries, eight carries. So it's not like they fed him the ball a ton. So, you know, went over 100 yards five times last year. So I feel really good about the running back position right now.
I think you need to keep feeding him the ball because, yeah, every time that he got at least 20 carries, he got at least 20 carries six times, and the one time he didn't get over 100, he got 97 yards. 21 carries, 97 yards against the Cardinals. So when they fed him the ball, Ken Walker did well. And I know we were questioning at times last year, why aren't they giving him the ball more? Are the Seahawks not establishing the run as much? Sometimes it just seemed like they kind of went away from it too early. And maybe it was the, hey, there is no one behind Ken Walker. He was not plan A going into the season. Rashad Penny was the running back. So Ken Walker's your depth. Okay, now you have a rookie. You don't want him to wear down. Don't know necessarily about his durability. And there wasn't a reliable every down back behind him. Now I think you have your guy. You have your reliable workhorse, your every down running back in Ken Walker. We might see more of a 20 carry range every game this year for Walker, especially because at least what it feels like with how they drafted him early, again, it feels like they have a lot of confidence in Zach Charbonnet, almost the confidence they had in Walker to be that solid change of pace back. So having Charbonnet there, you can maybe rely on Walker a little bit more, knowing, all right, we have a good backup option.
Yeah, Charbonnet's looked really good at practices. He's been one of the guys that has really stood out to me being down there. But, you know, the other thing you were talking about, Mike, where they got away from, you know, giving him the ball. And that's a lot of times where Pete will, he's very candid about that. But what happens is, you know, there's situations, you know, you get behind or, you know, all of a sudden you start running with, you know, a certain, you know, package that doesn't involve that guy. Kenneth Walker in this case, and you just don't get, like, I hear a lot of times Pete going, yeah, I wish, you know, not wish, but like, we just got away from, you know, we planned on giving him 15, 20 carries and he ended up only getting 10. And, you know, so the situation dictates a lot, like as far as, you know, how much they give him the ball. But, I just am all for having as many running backs as you can just because it's the durability issue. Is ridiculous. I mean, these guys, I've always said this, that the one or two or three times that I've had my hands on the ball in the NFL, you realize everybody's trying to kill you, you know, and that's the case. I mean, playing linebacker, I got maybe one guy coming to block me, maybe another guy, double team, whatever. There's two guys. When you have the ball in your hand, there's all 11 are hunting you down.
Is that why you didn't get your hands on the ball more?
Yeah, I was scared. Yes. No, I was because.
Yeah, you would have more interceptions. You just didn't want to get tackled.
I was all-state tight end. I had the best hands in high school and college even. I had a one-handed interception against the Cougs, and then I got in the NFL. I couldn't catch anything. Yeah, just bounced off my frying pan hands for whatever reason. But no, I mean, for those guys, I mean, the durability really, really is an issue. And in cut number nine, I love watching the guys come back their second year because just for me personally, that was when it really clicked for me.
It's much easier. You know, I know the plays. I know what to expect on offense and versus the defense. So it's much easier. My head's not spinning from when I first got here.
Yeah, you know, the other thing, honestly, paying bills for the first time, getting a house. I mean, you go to college.
Being an adult on your own.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you go to college, everything's taken care of for you. You go to the dorm, this and that. But yeah, all of those things fall into place. And then there's just a lot less that's clogging up your brain. I love hearing him say that it's slowing down for him.
And he literally admits his head was spinning.
Yeah.
So we don't often think about that, especially at a position like running back where it can be like, oh, how hard is that? You come in, you run the ball.
Right.
You know, you run. You hit that gap, run through where the big guys are blocking and find space. But I know it can be vastly different when you're talking about pass protection running routes a little bit. He talked about, this was from late last week when they were at OTAs, and he mentioned that pass catching, he's going to get more involved in that, that he actually is a pretty good pass catching running back. But in college, when you're such a good runner, you don't get utilized as a pass catching running back because they need you to run the football, well, run 75-yard touchdowns.
The other thing is the you mentioned the pass pro.
Yeah.
The blocking is foreign to a guy like him. Rashad Penny, same thing. I mean, if you're that good, they're giving you the ball. They're not asking you to block, right? So that's one of the big things.
Yeah, so imagine how easier, how much better it probably feels. Like Ken Walker just said, that you don't have all these stressors, all these worries, all these unknowns. You come in, there's a little confidence, right? When you came back for your second year in the league, you were just saying how you had to just sit there and shut up and listen to everyone your first year. Mm-hmm. When you came back, did you have a little frogginess to you? I bet a little bit of confidence. I'm sure that's the case for Ken Walker, a feeling of belonging. And we might even see a more confident rusher. Here, I'll play this one, too, because he said it started to click kind of early on in the season, but it did take a little bit. And then we saw what we can expect out of Ken Walker.
Probably the Chargers game was really when everything slowed down. You know, after the first start versus Cardinals, it was fine. But then the Chargers game is when I felt real comfortable.
Yeah, that was his second start and 167 yards. I guess he was feeling comfortable. Yeah. That was the one. Remember, he had the long run.
Two long touchdowns. A 74-yard touchdown run.
Was it 74? Yeah. I remember the second I was on the call with Rabel, and I remember saying something like when he got to the edge, because you could see with his speed that he was gonna turn the corner and be gone. And, you know, I think we don't talk enough about his speed, because, man, when he gets and again, there's field speed and then there's timed speed. And that's what I see from Charbonnet, is that I don't think he has a great 40 time. It's like in the 4.5s, but if you watch him on the field, he runs much faster. Some guys,
first
you know.
10 toss to Walker, goes right side, a little running room. Parkinson out front. Here comes up the sideline. He's on the run, 40, down to the 30. Are they going to catch him? I don't think so. 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Seahawks, 74 yards. The Seahawks get the ball on downs. They toss it to Ken Walker the third. He gets fired out of a Gatling gun, and he is gone up the right sidelines, 74, and nobody got a whiff, and he is in to stretch this lead. What a back. A great play call. The Seahawks now lead 36-16.
You were really proud of yourself pulling that out.
We heard your moment when you got excited. I think when you realized, he burst through the hole there on that side, and he was gone.
I sound like my grandmother. Oh, my.
Walker goes right side, has a little running room. Parkinson out front. Here comes up the sideline.
All right, that's enough out of you.
We're just showcasing what Ken Walker can do. The amazement that leaps forth from your mouth as you see him run.
Absolutely. So, you know, like you said, I mean, if they can get Kenny McIntosh going, they got DJ Dallas, who's just a great player to have on your team. I mean, he's like a Dylan Moore. You know, he can do everything. So, I feel pretty good about the running back position. And, you know, they lost Rashad Penny. I'll be very curious to see Rashad play in Philadelphia, because they saw something in him. And I know that, you know, it's kind of funny. The two games that he played against them, they were both in Philly. He had really good games. Mm-hmm. One of them was like a trap play that he ran for like 60-yard touchdown. And he had like a 35-yard touchdown. So I wish him the best. But, yeah, when he was gone and then Travis Homer leaves, and you're thinking, oh, boy. Now all of a sudden it's looking good. Now you are relying on a guy who's a rookie. But the one thing about Charbonnet that Pete said is that he's a workhorse, and that can maybe take a little bit of the burden off of Kenneth Walker. All right, coming up next, we will talk about this might be the last chance for a couple of guys on the Seahawk roster. We'll break that down next. This is Seattle Sports on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Welcome back. It's Wyman and Bob. We got Mike Lefko sitting in this week. Bob is down in beautiful San Diego, my hometown.
Yeah, I heard it's not so beautiful this week. L.A. too. He's in L.A.
Went to L.A. Yeah, hanging out with our guy Adam Ray down there. So yeah, we might get a boots on the ground report from Bob if we get some good results and from the Padre game. So that always looked like a cool ballpark to me.
Oh, it's really cool. Yeah,
I've not
really
been nice. There.
Really fun.
Yeah, so good place to take a vacation. I like this topic you brought up here, Mike, because this happens a lot, and it's for a lot of different reasons, but as we teased ahead, is this the last chance? And the couple of guys that you came up with, Mike, Alton Robinson, Syracuse guy, mm-hmm. right? And
we
then,
only claim him if he does well.
He did really
well.
He
was a Texas A&M guy, unless he does well.
Yeah. His rookie year, he got 5 sacks his rookie year. He played well. And he just was kind of one of those under-the-radar type of players. The other one is D. Eskridge, and I think that's an interesting one, especially considering that they drafted Smith and Jigba. So, you know, I think his days may be numbered. And, you know, and I don't know, the thing with Alton Robinson, I'll tell you what, let's hear from Pete first, and then, you know, everybody can form their own opinion.
A little bit of an unknown. Yeah, I don't know a lot about that right now. It has been it's been a long, hard road for him. I know that. I don't really have much else on that.
So that's obviously not an injury, right?
It,
I mean,
it is, right? Isn't he coming back from the one he?
Well,
that's the thing we don't know.
I think it's a lot more than that. Okay. I mean, he may have an injury, but to me, if you just had an injury, it would be something else. You know, I was listening back to the Devin Bush interview today, because we got so many awesome viewers looking at that. It was like 18,000 or something like that.
Oh, but up to that much.
Huh? Yeah.
They want to see you.
No, it was Devin Bush, man.
They wanted to see Devin Bush.
You couldn't see my face, so that was good. It was just the side of my head. But he talked about a guy named Tevin Smith. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember him. He was a linebacker for the Jags, and he played, you know, he was all pro. And then he got in some trouble off the field. And this is probably nothing like that. But, you know, you see players every once in a while that, you know, it's the things that happen off the field. And I'm not saying that there's anything nefarious going on with Alton Robinson or anything like that. But there's a lot of different things that can take you away from the game. You know, it could be your mental health. It could be family. You know, it could be, money, or just, you know, getting into any kind of trouble. I don't know. I mean, there's lots of different things. And when you hear Pete, and I'm not, like I said, Alton Robinson is a good, great kid and all that. So I don't think it's anything terrible, but there's lots of different things that can take you away from the game is my point. That, you know, I always like to joke, and really it's kind of morbid, but like you could get hit by a bus, right? But there's lots of things that could keep you off an NFL field. And I think the more vague Pete is, the more likely it is to be something other than an injury.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, you can figure out what he's saying better than a lot of us. So the kind of dissecting.
Pete speak.
Yes, Pete speak. Right. And it also feels like, regardless of what happens, his time has kind of passed by here based on what they've drafted and what they've brought in. I mean, all the edge guys they've drafted over the last two drafts, and the fact that they're high on Boye Mafe, and now Derek Hall is a second-round pick. Tyreek Smith, who we heard Pete raving about earlier in the show, that didn't even play last year, so you want to see what you get out of him. It doesn't feel like there's a role for Alton Robinson, and that's strange to think about, because after the 2021 season, like you said, this is a guy who's going to be an emerging piece of this team. Then he gets hurt early on before the 2022 season. Yeah. But now all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, right, he's still on the team. At this point, I wonder if you get anything out of him. Is it just an unexpected bonus at this point?
Yeah, it is. And like you said, that's the one position on defense. Well, other than like corner, I mean, safety, I would feel great about, because I'm excited about Julian Love and Quandre Diggs, but I don't know what we're going to get from Jamal Adams just because he's gotten hurt. And then you look at corner, but I'll tell you what, of the young guys, I'm really big on Boye Mafe. I feel like he's going to take a huge, talk about mm-hmm. that second year jump. I think he's going to take a huge jump and start to be like really put his stamp on the game. And then, you know, you've got Uchenna out there. You've got Derek Hall, who they just drafted. You got Daryl Taylor. So, you know, with Alton Robinson now, all of a sudden, it makes it even harder for him. And by the way, he has 5 sacks in his career, and he didn't play last year, as you mentioned. And, you know, he played in all 16 games. He played in 14 his rookie year, 16 games in 2021. So, yeah, that's kind of an interesting one there. And then, you know, the other one is D. Eskridge, and we heard from Shane Waldron about him.
Yeah, I think D's done a great job of showing up. We know he's had some unfortunate circumstances in terms of the bad luck with the injuries over the past few seasons. So he showed up again, ready to work, not letting the past affect, you know, his current approach right here. So right away out on the grass, you see his twitchiness, his explosion, you know, his feel for the game, and looking forward to seeing what he can bring to the table as we go through the offseason programming to camp.
Twitchiness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be harder for him, too, just more on the field, just because, like I said, the number 20 pick, Jackson Smith and Jigba out of Ohio State, that, you know, I think you look at those two first-rounders and you think, okay, those two guys are going to start, definitely. And so if you get into any, I don't think he's going to start over DK Metcalf or Tyler Lockett, but if you're in a three wide receiver situation, I feel like he's going to be the guy that's going to be on the field. And so that just makes it a lot tougher for D. Eskridge. You know, the one thing I felt bad for D is that, was it his rookie year when he got the concussion?
Yes.
In Indianapolis?
Yeah. Week one. Yeah.
Week one. Yeah. And just bad luck there. And then, you know, remember he was the one when Pete was talking about how he's piling up the number of days that he's not here, mm-hmm. or something like that. Kind of a different little way to put that. But I think he's had bad luck. But he is, remember that there was the big story that he was going with Russell Wilson and showing up when the dew is on the grass, yeah. and all that stuff. So, yeah, I feel like he's kind of been snake bit. A little bit. So, especially with the concussion thing, I mean, you have to be really careful about that. So, best of luck to those two guys. All right, coming up next, we're going to continue our off-season look around the NFC West with Rams play-by-play broadcaster J.B. Long. That's next on Wyman and Bob with Mike Lefko. This is Seattle Sports on 710 and seattlesports.com.